something like 1,500 pages of documents was not given over to Alec Baldwin's defense team, she said, quote, "I had never seen it," in reference to the report and other evidence, "and I didn't realize that it wasn't under the same case number because I'm not a law enforcement officer and I don't work at the sheriff's department, but you are right," in reference to the misfiled evidence. First off, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Welcome back to Gossip Without Prejudice. I am John Socha, and I am so sorry that we have done a part one, part two with a couple of days gap in between them. I never thought I'd be a podcast that did that. Last week, we covered specifically Alec Baldwin's Rust shooting, mm-hmm. the general timeline of the prosecution, the sort of factual circumstances behind it, TLDR, Nepo Baby Armorer, on the loose executive producer with anger issues, hired the dirt cheapest non-union set workers he could, and it all came together in the unfortunate death of Helena Hutchins and the injury of several other people. When a dummy round that was not a dummy round, it was just a bullet round, went off.
Just a regular bullet.
Yeah, a regular bullet, and sadly killed someone. That was last week. Go watch that episode if you want a more of a specific refresher. Today, we are talking about the procedural instances of the Brady violation that caused Alec Baldwin to walk away during his second prosecution, because they filed initial charges and then dismissed them voluntarily and then reintroduced them, and then they fumbled the bag with prejudice on the second one. That's what we're talking about today, and this is why I wanted to do this in a two-parter, because the first episode was already so long, and this one is hoping to be about 30 to 45 minutes. We'll see if that happens. Mm-hmm. But it's important to know, because this is like the highest profile example of a great Brady violation, but of prosecutorial misconduct. And Gutierrez Reed was just released from prison last month.
Wow.
Sam, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Another day, another sunny day, another day to talk about some very crazy shit. I've been thinking about nothing but Atomos connections and servers last hour. That's like all I can tell you about is about frame.io integrations with Atomos connects. That's what's been on my mind.
So those of you that don't know, our editor, Michelle, God bless Michelle, is in Colorado, and our studio is very much here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And we use a 3-camera setup, which means we have like 90 gigabytes of footage per hour or something?
And it's all recording at 4K to make beautiful social clips. And so, we're trying to transfer. I've been trying to figure out the best way to transfer 90 gigabytes of data as quickly as possible.
Yeah. It's been a major impediment of why we haven't been able to move faster, because 90 gigabytes of our ISP hates to see us coming. Our internet provider really hates to see us coming. But sometimes we use Dropbox or OneDrive to move these files, and sometimes the upload can take hours, and then sometimes it fails, so we have to try again. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get these cameras to stream directly to the fucking dark web or whatever Sam is setting up, and then Michelle can retrieve them on the other side, and that's what we've been fucking with to try and get our upload schedule harmonized to cut out 6 hours of time per episode.
Yep.
So it's been so exciting. Okay, so last week, death of Helena Hutchins on the set of Rust, a New Mexico-based film set headed by Alec Baldwin. I think we've all got the overview. Go to the last episode if you want something more specific. We are going to refresh on the quick timeline. On January 19th, 2023, both Baldwin and Gutierrez Reed, the stepdaughter of Thel Reed, Nepo Baby Armorer, friend of the podcast, are charged with 2 counts of involuntary manslaughter, which is no good in legal terms. That's the term of art, no good.
Involuntary manslaughter, bad.
Bad. Okay, yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, to put that in Reddit terms. Mm-hmm.
Am I the asshole for committing involuntary manslaughter and
criminal negligence of a firearm?
Yeah.
So they had one criminal information entered against them, in 2023, and then the DA dismissed it due to a lot of political posturing. They've got several special prosecutors thrown off the case, and then reindicted in January 19th of 2024, a year later.
Gotcha.
Right. Also on 2 counts of involuntary manslaughter, 1 negligent use of a firearm, and the other without due caution or circumspection. So reckless indifference to human life. We've all heard it before. Mm-hmm. He faced up to 18 months in prison for his alleged crimes. So now is probably a good time to explain something I did not explain last time. Special prosecutors, they are sourced from a variety of places, but special prosecutors are just attorneys that, at their discretion, the district attorney appoints to handle specific matters, such as famously the Mueller investigation at the federal level, where you appoint a specific DOJ attorney or even a private attorney if you wanted to investigate or execute a special circumstance. But it can also just be local attorneys. And the prosecutor we are going to be talking about a lot today, her name is Carrie Morrissey. She's just a local criminal defense and general practice attorney in New Mexico. And she is the prosecutor who will be investigated for significant misconduct in this case.
Wow. So, it sounds like from what you've said about what I'm learning about prosecutors, like, they start rubbing their hands, thinking about the book deal down the line. They're like, they're already picturing themselves on Oprah.
Yep.
Talking about
talk show, daily. And that's actually exactly what I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about here. Usually prosecutions are not so public against such a renowned figure for such like a heartthrob. Oh, look at this guy. He's negligent and he's driving his film crew to exhaustion. That's exactly what happened here, right? Prosecutor really got too big for her britches. Really wanted that book deal or that political promotion, but you know, it would further her ends in some way. And it really caused a rift internally among the prosecution team. So on July 12th, 2024, Judge Marlo Sommer, the New Mexico judge, dismissed Alec Baldwin's case with prejudice, which means it can never be brought back, ruling that prosecutors did not properly turn over evidence in his defense. She sided with the defense and dismissed the case in a manner that means it could never be brought back under any formula. Special Prosecutor Ocampo-Johnson had actually resigned the same day this decision came down when she found out from her co-prosecutor, Morrissey, that they had withheld evidence.
Oh, my God.
So let's explain what that means.
Wow.
So, there we go. So we want to start with a case called Brady v. Maryland, where the U.S. Supreme Court established that a prosecutor's suppression of material evidence violates a criminal defendant's due process rights substantially. This means that the prosecution must disclose any evidence that initially that the defense requests, but it was later expanded to being you got to hand over evidence even if they don't specifically request it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened here. So around the time of Hannah Gutierrez Reed's trial, which she was convicted at, found guilty, that we're not talking about that today, Reed's out to pasture, a man named Troy Teske submitted a batch of bullets to the Santa Fe Sheriff's Office claiming that the bullets came from the same batch as the live rounds box used on set that killed Helena Hutchins.
Wow.
Now, according to the special prosecutor, Carrie Morrissey, Teske was a close friend of Thel Reed, Gutierrez's stepdad. We've talked about him many times. However, the bullets were filed under a separate case number, and Morrissey stated she believed they were not connected to the bullet that killed Helena Hutchins.
Wow.
So what happened here is a potential exculpatory witness submitted exculpatory evidence, which is the bullets, which is like the nexus of the case, who was responsible for having all these live rounds laying around.
Yeah.
And then it was filed under a separate case number that Alec was not necessarily involved in, and then the prosecutor did not tell the defense.
Wow.
So Morrissey, it took the highly unusual step of, when this all came to light, actually testifying before the court. We'll get more into that. But she later testified that she did not consider the evidence relevant to Baldwin's case, insisting that the ammunition was not linked to the case or hidden from the defense at all. She did concede that material evidence, including ammunition from the set of rust, was not disclosed to the defense also. So like separate other stuff, including a preliminary report, was not handed over. Something like 1,500 pages of documents was not given over to Alec Baldwin's defense team. She said, quote, "I had never seen it," in reference to the report and other evidence, "and I didn't realize that it wasn't under the same case number because I'm not a law enforcement officer and I don't work at the sheriff's department, but you are right," in reference to the misfiled evidence. First off, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, exactly. You
know, at the time, she was an attorney of 20 years experience.
Oh, man. Yeah, so you gotta...
Yeah, you gotta know.
You've ran into some law or some case filing before. Yeah. I don't know.
It's not rocket... You know, it's not rocket surgery.
Yeah. Exactly.
Baldwin's defense team viewed this as a cover-up, arguing that potentially exculpatory evidence had been withheld from them, and as well as their opportunity to build their case around it. So, like, this is in the middle. This is on the third day of trial.
Yeah.
They have no time to cross-examine this witness or any other potential witnesses who might be involved, nor to get the bullets tested, sourced to the original batch, to see... to interview everyone to talk about whether or not the bullets had been cross-contaminated.
Yeah.
Because the pillars of the prosecution against Baldwin was that, like, hey, man, you were negligent. Bullets ended up where they shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. You killed someone because of it. But if those bullets came from somewhere or someone else,
yeah,
it chops the entire case off at the knees. So this was like a very, very specific, like a very huge issue. And mm-hmm. the reason I emphasized she believed when I mentioned Prosecutor Morrissey earlier is that it's not up to her to decide what's exculpatory in substantial due process considerations. Because if that was the case, then the prosecution could just make, like, really fucking easily get around the Brady rule by just saying, oh, all this exculpatory evidence isn't related to my prosecution. Better not hand it over.
Yeah.
And so the versus Texas put it, quote, at best, Morrissey fell into the trap of believing she could determine what evidence was material and immaterial to the defense. Nothing could be further from the truth, and thus her prosecution fell apart.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So in conducting an analysis of whether or not there is a Brady violation, there's three essential pillars. It's that, one, the court concluded exculpatory evidence was suppressed, and here the court did make those findings that, like, hey, there's this other guy, bullets, there's a preliminary report.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff you didn't hand over. When, you know, whether or not they requested it now under this case law is immaterial.
Mm-hmm.
So it was suppressed. Pillar two, that the evidence was favorable to the defense. And therefore, like, remember, Brady is a nexus of fairness for due process in favor of the defense. So, you know, the evidence must be relevant specifically to the defense's case.
Yeah. Right?
If they withheld evidence and it was, like, bad for the defense, then here that probably wouldn't have mattered so much, especially since it's mostly just, that's more of an issue of prosecutorial discretion, what evidence to put before the jury.
Okay.
Right. But here it's like, hey, you've got to give all the defense stuff that's relevant. So pillar two is that the evidence was favorable to the defense, and three, that the evidence was material. Right. So the evidence does have to be related to the case. Now, I don't know about you, but a box of bullets on the set of a bullet accident.
Yeah.
Seems pretty relevant.
Pretty relevant. So this is like mostly the Brady violation. It's like fair play. It basically, like, both, everybody has to be playing by the same rules.
Yes, though here the burden, Brady is primarily a burden upon the state. Right.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
It's their specific, maybe we should do a full case breakdown of Brady v. Maryland. It was a very cool case. I have a quick summary here. But
so forgive me for my laymanism, you keep saying this fancy word, exculpatory.
It means it helps you out.
Oh, okay.
Like, gotcha. Exculpatory, like if I robbed a house and then I had a witness or like a document or a video that provided me a rock solid alibi saying I was actually in Argentina at the time. And then that's exculpatory.
Yeah.
It's helpful evidence in favor of the defense. So for a specific case breakdown of Brady v. Maryland, in 1963, a man named John L. Brady and his accomplice, Charles Boblett, were found guilty of first-degree murder in the circuit court of Anne Arundel County in Maryland? A county in Maryland. A circuit court county in Maryland. During his trial, Brady confessed to participating in the preceding robbery. So there was like a robbery and then someone died. But said it was Boblett who did the killing, which is what he was being charged with. Both Brady and Boblett were given the death penalty at sentencing after they had found guilty. Mm-hmm. It was only after the trial that Brady and his defense learned that Boblett had confessed to the murder in an extrajudicial statement.
Whoa.
The prosecution had withheld this piece of evidence, which to me seems pretty relevant.
Yeah, I think so.
even when Brady's defense had asked for it.
Wow.
If it existed. On appeal, the Maryland Court of Appeals sided with Brady and held that the suppression of the evidence denied the defendant substantial due process rights under the Constitution. They also remanded the case to reconsider the question of punishment only. So they're like, okay, this guy's guilty, but this was not considered by the judge at sentencing, which is the judge's job. Jury finds you guilty, judge decides what to do with you.
Yeah.
And so they gave it back to the lower court to say, okay, maybe we shouldn't kill this guy.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Feels
like if someone confessed to a murder, you shouldn't also die for that murder.
Yes.
I don't know. No ethics professor.
It seems like a kind of harsh Mirmello if you're executed for the crime of your accomplice. You really got to pick better accomplices these days.
I mean, seriously.
The case was appealed to SCOTUS, where they decided 7-2 that, that's not chill, dude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who were the two
prosecutorial
against?
Misconduct bad.
Yeah.
The suppression of evidence violated Brady's right to due process. Now that's at first that they requested it mm-hmm. was a critical nexus of Brady. Mm-hmm. But it was further shaped in a very important and necessary ways by two following proceedings. Mm. One is United States v. Bagley, and then one is Kyles v. Whitley. Mm-hmm. Initially, the Brady rule was deemed only applicable if, like, you affirmatively asked for stuff.
Yeah.
Had made, you know, a specific explicit inquiry for evidence that the prosecution may have at mm-hmm. pretrial, you know, information, et cetera.
Yeah.
That the prosecution denied, mm-hmm. right? In United States v. Bagley, the Supreme Court did away with that requirement. Mm-hmm. In October of 1977, Hughes Anderson Bagley was indicted on 15 charges of violating federal narcotics and firearms statutes.
Wow.
Dude was in it rough.
Yeah.
The government's principal witness was James F. O'Connor and Donald E. Mitchell, security guards who assisted the Bureau of Alcohol. Mm. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the bureau that handles everything rad in one place.
Yeah.
by undercover, like in clandestine manner, conducting mm-hmm. An investigation of Bagley. So like they were investigators for the ATF. Mm-hmm. Bagley's defense had asked for information about any deals or promises made by ATF to O'Connor or mm-hmm. Mitchell, but they were only produced affidavits from each stating they spoke without threat or reward.
Oh.
Yeah. In 1980, so some years later, mm-hmm. Bagley filed a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act. Most things that the government does can be discoverable to the general public under mm-hmm. the FOIA, under FOIA, FOIA, regarding information on this case, and found contracts indicating mm-hmm. ATF had promised payment to both O'Connor and Mitchell. Bagley moved to vacate his sentence, alleging the government's failure to disclose these contracts violated the right to due process. The district judge ruled in favor of Bagley, but the United States Court of Appeals, Ninth Circuit, reversed the ruling, rare L from the Ninth Circuit, reasoning that the government's initial failure to disclose information impaired Bagley's right to confront adverse witnesses through effective cross-examination.
Mm.
But SCOTUS ruled on the matter 5-3, determined that, quote, undisclosed evidence was only material if there was reasonable possibility that the result in the proceedings would have been different if the evidence had been disclosed. In this case, the evidence Bagley had wanted would not have changed the fact of the original ruling.
Gotcha.
Yeah. U.S. v. Bagley, therefore, established a standard for the Brady rule that nondisclosure of evidence is a constitutional error only if there's reasonable probability that the disclosure would have changed the outcome.
Gotcha.
Which does make sense. It's
yeah.
a practical limitation. With so, me so far?
Yeah. So basically, it established the precedent that if there is helpful evidence,
yep.
helpful evidence must be made available to all parties.
That is both material mm-hmm. and would likely affect the outcome if you can go back and, like, it's got to affect the outcome.
Gotcha. And
well.
So this only applies to the state, though. This doesn't really apply.
U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, gotcha.
Everywhere.
Okay.
Everywhere. Though I will say each individual state applies their, like New Mexico had, we won't go over it here, but New Mexico had specific Brady guidelines mm. of how courts apply it.
Uh-huh.
So there's some wiggle room,
yeah.
jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but it is clear that overall there is a blanket rule that applies to the whole country.
Yeah.
In the case of Kyles v. Whitley, the other case, the Brady rule is further refined. The case ultimately determined that the prosecution has a duty to find and disclose any evidence favorable to the defendant, even if the prosecutorial team is unaware of this evidence beforehand. This is what really sank the prosecutor here. In 1994, Curtis Lee Kyles was charged with murdering a woman in a parking lot. Kyles was convicted and sentenced to death, and SCOTUS wow. affirmed his decision on direct appeal. Kyles then sought a judicial reexamination, which was not granted, but in this process, he uncovered evidence favorable to him that the prosecution failed to disclose before or during his initial trial.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he filed a habeas corpus petition, which basically means he filed a lawsuit, a challenge that says, hey, I don't think I fit the definition of a prisoner.
Yeah.
Let me out of here. Abrego Garcia, eat your heart out. We mm-hmm. should talk more about that later. He challenged his sentencing. Kyle cites Brady v. Maryland in his petition due to the prosecution's failure to share the evidence he unearthed. The district court denied, and the U.S. Court of Appeals, Fifth Circuit, affirmed the ruling, the denial. Mm-hmm. But SCOTUS went on to issue an opinion on the question of, one, whether the evidence in question would have resulted in acquittal or mistrial, and two, if the evidence would have created enough doubt in the mind of at least one juror that would have changed the sentencing. Because remember, if you don't have a unanimous jury, you mm-hmm. can change the verdict in many jurisdictions. Mm. And their answer to both was, maybe.
Yeah.
So they ruled that Kyles was entitled to a new trial.
Yeah.
Because the effect of suppressed evidence could not be determined at judicial examination, and they erred on the side of caution.
Gotcha. So, yeah, basically, like, they can't tell whether or not it would have been super helpful or, like, hurt.
Yeah, so they
just
aired,
redid it.
They aired on the side of caution and issued a retrial. So basically, whether or not... So it's like the duty on the prosecution. He's got to hand over evidence.
Yeah.
That's material, likely to change the outcome, whether or not the defense requests it, and even if you didn't know about it beforehand. So like there's almost an affirmative duty here. The burden is considered to be met if the defendant can show that there is a, quote, a reasonable probability that the outcome of the trial would have been different had the information been originally disclosed.
Mm.
Yeah. SCOTUS developed a 4-part test outlined below and below in my notes that I helpfully, you know, prepared with Cornell Law's law dictionary last night. So the 4-part test is here. Reasonable probability is a question whether or not the government's failure to disclose the information undermines confidence in the outcome of the trial. Mm-hmm. Confidence is key here because the government has a vested interest in not just maintaining fairness, but the perception of fairness.
Yeah.
Right. So there's one. Quote, reasonable probability is not a sufficiency of evidence test, and the defendant does not need to show the evidence, barring any evidence undermined by the withheld information, is inadequate to support a conviction. Rather, the defendant merely must show that the withheld information can reasonably be taken to put the whole case in a different light.
Mm.
Right? And three, failure to disclose information, which was reasonably probability of changing the outcome, is inherently harmful. Thus, there is no need for a separate harmless error review. And four, all information not disclosed must be considered collectively, not item by item.
Gotcha.
Right? Uh-huh. And so here in the Gutierrez, in Alex's case,
yeah,
there was a witness that delivered questionable evidence, which is the ammo, and multiple reports. And because all this stuff was missing, there had been elicited false testimony on the second day of Alex's trial.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And so the Supreme Court says you can't examine each one of these individually. You have to examine their impacts together in a holistic setting.
Yeah, it basically throws the whole trial into question.
Yeah.
Like, because there's this key piece of evidence that's not being made available to everyone in the courtroom.
Yes. So what's unusual about this situation is that when Brady violations are detected, they're usually not this dramatic. They're not common, put it that way. But when they're detected, the court usually tries to find the lesser remedy. So like an adverse jury instruction or just a mistrial to do it again, something like that. They can also sua sponte if the court discovers it independently. They can sua sponte means on pretty much on its own. The court can just do stuff without anyone asking, which is rare because that's usually not how the court system works. Mm-hmm. Brady rule inherently involves a lack of information at the side of the defense. It's an asymmetrical test. Violations of the Brady rule are typically only discovered after the defendant is already convicted. So this is part of why this was so weird. Uh-huh. It blew up during trial.
Yeah.
As a result, the most common outcome of a Brady rule violation is just overturning that conviction or maybe a new trial ipso facto or a new sentencing, something like that. Additionally, if the prosecution withheld Brady material intentionally or knowingly, they may be subject to personal sanctions, as in the bar can actually come after you and suspend your license.
Oh.
That's actually supposed to be one of the biggest checks on prosecutorial power. It's the bar taking away your license.
Yeah.
Because you're immune from civil liability as a prosecutor, even if you get it wrong or the person is later found out to be innocent.
Yeah.
Even stronger immunity than police in many places.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it makes sense. They have to be able to do their job.
So the problem here is that without seeing the ammunition before the third day of the trial, or even knowing about it, the defense was not able to prepare adequately to address and utilize the material witness, to examine the evidence. Like there was just a whole, and their entire case was structured around the ammunition, the proverbial ammunition they have, and the literal ammunition they didn't.
Yeah.
Right? So the prosecution, upon finding this out, ran straight to the judge and filed an expedited motion. Judge Marlo Sumner determined the violation of the Brady rule was so severe it warranted dismissing the trial altogether and that there was no lesser remedy.
Wow.
There is no way for the court to right this wrong at this point in the proceedings. The sanction of dismissal is the only warranted remedy.
Wow. And so this is not common. It being thrown out.
Completely thrown out with prejudice. Uh-huh. Usually it's not it's uncommon because usually it's after you're prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
So you just go back and overturn your sentence or something.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, it's unusual for the prosecutor to take the stand in their own defense because the prosecutor, when confronted with this, they didn't actually respond to Baldwin's expedited motion properly in writing. They discovered what was going on. The other special prosecutor looked to her left and right and saw what her, because she didn't know, it was a separate case.
Uh-huh.
She looked at her fellow prosecutor and said, I'm resigning.
Yeah.
And walked out before the hearing. Right. So they didn't file a written response. They just showed up at the hearing. And then the remaining special prosecutor, Morrissey, got up and actually testified. on her own recognizance about her own conduct without counsel, I believe. All of that is very stupid.
Yeah.
That's stupid for any one of it. Like, first off, she herself should have moved to dismiss. That might have saved some face for her. Because the other prosecutor wasn't willing to put her name to this.
Yeah,
she actually went and talked to the news and said, there were disagreements. I don't even think we should have gone forward with this opposition hearing.
Wow.
And she just walked out. So,
this is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. A typical way to deal with a Brady violation mid-trial is just to grant a continuance and to, like, just figure out what's going on, give the defense more time, call a new jury later. But in this instance, the case was already, Jeopardy had already attached.
Yeah.
Right? And double Jeopardy means you can't be charged with the same crime twice. Once the jury is convened, you got Jeopardy. Right? And this was midway through the trial.
Yeah.
So the court said, in this case, we can't go back. We can't double back. This violation irrevocably compromised Baldwin's right to a fair trial forever. So I'm going to read you some quotes from the opinion here.
Yeah.
Quote, dismissal with prejudice is appropriate for several reasons. First, the state repeatedly failed to fulfill its discovery obligations during pretrial litigation of this case. Second, the state's suppression of the test case supplied information. That's the gentleman, the Thel Reed's friend, allegedly.
Yeah.
And related evidence constitutes willful and deliberate misconduct. Now, a deliberate willful misconduct finding, bad.
Yeah.
Third, Special Prosecutor Morrissey elicited false testimony from CST Popple on July 11, 2024 in the presence of the jury. Because the false testimony was because she and the witness knew about this other stuff that had happened, but it wasn't in this case number. So it's like, oh, are you aware of anything else in this case?
Yeah.
And so the witness said no and testified in that effect.
Yeah.
And then when it came to light later, it's like, hey, you fed deliberately bad information to the jury affirmatively from a witness.
Wow.
Yeah, which is to say bad.
Yeah.
Quote, a fourth, a mistrial in this case would not be based upon manifest necessity, and Jeopardy had attached well before information concerning the nondisclosure came to light. So double Jeopardy, we've already charged him, we've got a jury, you only got one chance at this. Here, a mistrial would be based solely on the state's discovery violations. In this circumstance, a sua sponte declaration of a mistrial is improper.
Wow.
Yeah. A sua sponte, again, just means the court declaring a mistrial on its own recognizance.
Yeah. So they messed up so bad, the whole thing's bunk.
Yeah. The whole thing's bunk from the very beginning.
That is crazy.
Yeah. What happened? So the other prosecutor, special prosecutor is Erlinder Ocampo Johnson, one of the state special prosecutors appointed after the initial special prosecutor stepped down from political pressure from Alec Baldwin's amazing legal team, left the case just before Judge Marlo Summers dismissed it altogether.
Wow.
She walked out, of the hearing and said, hey, I'm off this prosecution team. I can't do this.
Oh,
she told NBC News, quote, it was clear that it was something that should have been turned over, and she did not agree with Morrissey's decision to move forward with the opposition hearing.
Holy wow. So Morrissey was just charging ahead the whole time.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone around her is dropping like flies just because they're like...
They got served with initial... the motion, the expedited motion Alec Baldwin's defense team filed, and they didn't file a response, I'm guessing, because the girls were fighting. Literally, and figuratively, the prosecution team was like, okay, first off, what is this? Second off, how dare you? Because they're professional. These are special prosecutors. They are brought in from outside the DA's office. These guys have private practice. They can't risk this. Kara Morrissey, in case you're wondering what happened to her, Google shows that her law office is permanently closed.
Wow.
I will say the Google reviews are crazy.
What's he sitting at?
The top one is, Kara Morrissey violated basic rights of American jurisprudence. Defendants are innocent until proven guilty through suppression of evidence. Miss Morrissey cannot be trusted to uphold her sworn code of ethics as a lawyer, and certainly should not be appointed to work on special prosecutions anymore.
Dang.
She tried to cheat her way to victory and lost.
That's so true. Yeah, I know. The only thing worse than cheating to win is cheating and losing, you know?
I will say, there is a 5-star review left at right around the time of the trial, or the dismissal that says, well done, Miss Morrissey. You did a thorough and fantastic job for society. Thank you.
Oh, no. That's just her and her burner account.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it was in reference to like, thanks for getting Alec Baldwin off the hook, which is just
Which is just
fantastic. Yeah, which is fantastic stuff. And the devastating consequences of being a practitioner that like doesn't. That gets public. It's really hard to get publicly caught. It's harder to get publicly caught as a prosecutor, and it's even harder to get caught so badly that your prosecution, that is a high profile, a profile instance, falls apart entirely.
Yeah, then it all gets thrown out. Like this feels rare. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, prosecutorial misconduct is a big problem. The problem is that we don't know the size of the problem. Prosecutors are so rarely faced disciplinary proceedings or charges, like most that you don't even try.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know. I think most prosecutors are honorable people. But let's just say they don't make a living out of finding people innocent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right? And especially since the vacuum of information we're working in specifically precludes, like if evidence is held and you never find out about it, how do you prove a negative?
Yeah, like, exactly.
If the ultimately, a lot of the system relies on trust because it's just like, hey, did you turn over all the evidence?
Yeah.
Yeah, Your Honor. Oh, they said they said they gave you everything.
Yeah.
Let's call the jury.
Uh-huh.
You know, and whether or not that's a fair system or a system that you feel comfortable with, I can't determine that for you. I think that's up to the people to decide.
Well, I mean, and you have to wonder, like, how much of this was only discovered because Alec Baldwin has, I'm guessing, one of the most well-funded illegal teams you could get. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
to say the least, that's exactly what happened here. So, so rarely in, like, a lot of my clients are very wealthy, but even they have financial constraints. Like a lot of my team charges $650 an hour, $450 an hour, right? And that's just for our attorneys. Our paralegals charge hundreds an hour.
Yeah.
Right? And so the times when you are on a case with truly unlimited resources to overturn every stone remains rare for the vast majority of practitioners. And this was a good case, but a sad case of all the justice you can buy.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin bought enough justice that he overturned the right stone, and I don't think most people would have gotten out of this.
Yeah, exactly. Man, bought by the dollar.
Bought by the dollar, sold by the gavel.
Yeah, true.
Yes. So I think that's what I wanted to go over today. I'll put all of the motion, the court's decision, I'll put all of that in the show notes. I wanted to go over this because Brady violations are really a key constitutional protection, and there's nothing out there that's going to protect you better than a court that can't just hide the evidence that they're using to charge you that might be exculpatory, and to take that generally take that discretion out of the prosecutor's hands. That's up for the defense to decide, not the prosecution.
Gotcha.
Guys, that's it for this episode. I so appreciate your support. Go to gospelwithoutprejudice.com, support the show, leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to us on. I see you, Apple Podcasts, do your thing. And we will see you again very soon. We're going to be back to our more normal coverage. Let us know what you think about the part one, part two format. I'm waffling on whether or not it's the right vibe we want to do like a longer factual summary and then follow it up with like a moderately shorter like follow through on the law. I think our audience will have to email us gossipwithoutprejudice@gmail.com. We already get a lot of questions and feedback. We would appreciate more. Thanks so much, guys.
Later.